This is Barry List at Informs, the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. You're listening to Science at Better, a series of podcasts about ways that analytics and math modeling help people like you and organizations like your own. Even before Informs began publishing its new magazine, analytics had become a buzzword for counting what matters in business. In today's segment, we speak with Tom Davenport, whose book, Competing on Analytics, became a bestseller and trendsetter among business books. A column by Professor Davenport, The Rise of Strategic Analytics, appears in the fall issue of the Informs magazine Analytics. Professor, welcome to the Science of Better.
Thanks, Barry. Happy to be here.
For starters, what do you mean by the term analytics?
Well, I usually distinguish between analytics and much of what happens in the business intelligence space. I'm an IT guy, and much of what that is reporting. It's just kind of producing reports, either standard or ad hoc, on what happened in the past with no explanation of why it happened. Analytics, for me, are either using statistical models to explain what happened, or prediction or optimization to obviously look into the future or look into the ideal state, and that goes well beyond reporting and I think provides a lot more value to organizations.
And what do you mean when you talk about competing on analytics?
Well, I think analytics are of course not a new thing, but in my research, which I started in about early 2005, I found a number of organizations that were actually building their strategies around their analytical capabilities. They were using analytics as the core of their strategies and their value propositions to customers.
And what kinds of corporations and organizations compete on analytics?
Well, they tend to be, I think you can almost find one in every industry, but they tend to be concentrated more in industries that have a lot of data on their customers, you know, since doing things with customers is usually a good way to compete. If you have a lot of data about your customers and can segment them, can target them, can predict which ones are going to buy what, you tend to be pretty successful, and so that would be more consumer-oriented companies who have a good handle on who their customers are. And we've seen it, of course, for many years in airlines with both frequent flyer marketing programs and yield management programs. You see it increasingly in hotels. I saw it to a large degree in companies like Harrah's and the gaming industry that have moved into loyalty-oriented marketing. You see it in supermarkets like Tesco from the UK that have a loyalty card. So you tend to find it more in industries that have a lot of data. Certainly financial services would fall into that category as well.
Tracing your history with the subject, in your column in the Informs magazine, Analytics, you write that you used analytics as a grad student, turned to other pursuits for a number of years, and then came back to the subject with gusto when you came to write your book. Tell us what interested you, what brought you back to the subject.
Well, I was always, probably a pretty typical social sciences user. I was a sociologist, but I worked for a number of years in a statistical computing lab at Harvard and then managed statistical computing for Harvard for a while. So I was particularly focused on the computational aspects of this, I guess. And then I got into kind of IT strategy work, did a lot of work in knowledge management and how companies manage information effectively. I remember getting a little bit upset about some stuff I was reading about data mining, where people were basically claiming that, oh, you don't even really need people anymore. You can do all this with some very high-powered computers and algorithms. And I, maybe being a sociologist, I suspected that humans had a more important role than just sitting back and watching the computers work. And so I did a little research project with one of my colleagues. I was running a research center for Accenture at the time. I did a little research project on whether the companies that were really good at analytics had a lot of smart people around, and it turned out that invariably they did. So we published that work, I think it was in California Management Review, but nobody paid a lot of attention. It was only until 2006, when I published Competing on Analytics, that general managers, I think, started to pay attention to my work in that area anyway.
Are you getting reactions from those general managers?
Yeah, pretty amazing levels of reactions. I mean, the good news for anybody analytical, I guess, is that Competing on Analytics article was the best-selling reprint of Harvard Business Review in 2006, and the book based on it was a bestseller, I think is in 12 or 13 different languages now, and I must say I didn't expect such a positive reaction for, you know, a fairly esoteric subject, but I think it's a sign that analytics have really come of age for the general business population now.
You mentioned in the article that you received funding to study about 32 companies. I think that was either at the time of the initial article or at the time of the book. Do you remember how you selected them?
Well, it was not a random sample at all. We were trying to find companies that were doing a lot with, this was originally a study on business intelligence in general, and I ended up narrowing it a bit to focus on analytics and then on companies that were competing on analytics. So we tried to identify organizations through the literature, some of which we looked at the Informs Edelman Prize winners and tried to talk to as many of them as we could, too.
Uh-huh.
But it was to try to identify companies that were aggressively using analytics. And, you know, even with that criterion in mind, only about a third of the companies were classified by our research team as seriously competing on analytics. And, you know, of course, there's a range. There were some companies even in that list who weren't really doing very much at all. There were some that had it, but it was a very backroom activity. And then there were some companies that, you know, kind of had a glimmer in their eye, an analytical glimmer in their eye about what they wanted to do in the future. But only a third were the out-and-out analytical competitors.
Well, one of the companies you studied was the Hotel Casino Harrah's, and indeed the CEO of Harrah's wrote an intro to your book. What stood out to you about Harrah's?
Well, it's just a dramatic turnaround story. Harrah's was kind of an also-ran for a number of years in that industry, and so they decide to bring in Gary Loveman, my friend and neighbor, a former professor at Harvard Business School, and he was originally not CEO, he was Chief Operations and Marketing Officer, which is still a pretty influential role, and he saw that they had a number of potential assets, like a loyalty program that wasn't being used very effectively, and some very kind of scattershot random marketing programs. And so he started to focus on who are their best customers, you know, determined analytically, and what offers would lure them into to gamble at, you know, the different Harrah's casinos, and how do you build cross-market loyalty, which people thought really wasn't possible in that industry. Then he got into optimizing the pricing of hotel rooms and optimizing the casino's take on the slot machines, starting to look at what kinds of people really were most effective employees through analytics. So applied it very broadly, but really focused on loyalty and service as their two major target areas. And just a dramatic turnaround. Their stock went from something like $12 when Gary went there to I think they sold to a couple of private equity firms at about $90 six or seven years later. Just every year things went up.
So he multiplied the value of the company by nine times, or
nearly nine times. Yeah, maybe closer to seven or eight, but a very dramatic turnaround, and I think he would be the first to attest that it was, you know, based on data and analytics.
You quote a Capital One executive who says, kind of surprisingly, it's not about the numbers. So what is it about the subject of analytics?
Well, I think certainly there is a component of it that's very much about the numbers, but that's pretty much all, you know, when you look at the literature on analytics, until fairly recently, that was about all that anybody addressed. But what I've tried to do in my work is to look at the bigger picture of how analytics take place within organizations. You know, first you have to have some good data before you can do any numbers, and a lot of analytical activity has to be preceded by that. There are some organizational issues around how do you really decide where in the organization you apply analytics, and how can you take a more enterprise-level perspective as opposed to the silos that many organizations have developed. Very strong leadership component. You wouldn't have had that kind of turnaround at Harrah's without somebody like Gary Loveman playing a very strong leadership role. Capital One had that in Rich Fairbank and Nigel Morris, their founders. They were highly analytical and pushed for this idea of information-based strategy all over the place. There's kind of a strategic role around picking what areas of your business really can benefit from analytics. And finally, there's a kind of a human resource piece around how do you get the right people. That's just I think those are the most important non-quantitative factors in analytical success.
And why is it so important to carefully define what's being counted and analyzed?
Well, mostly because you can't really do it all. I mean, I think, as I suggested earlier, you need some good analytical people to do this, and they're not easy or cheap to come by. You need to do a lot of work in preparing your data and so on. So you do need to figure out where you're going to get the most return for your investment, and you know where you're really going to differentiate your organization with your analytical capabilities. So, as I said, for Harrah's, that was around loyalty and service. If you're Progressive Insurance, another company that's been historically quite analytical, it was in the whole area of the pricing of risk, and they just devote a huge amount of attention to figuring out, you know, what variables really differentiate one customer from another in, you know, how likely they are to crash their cars or not.
That's interesting, because I would have thought that the insurance companies are doing this already.
Well, they are, but Progressive has always been the most progressive, if you will, about the use of analytics. And I think they, you know, you have to keep refining your edge. It's an industry where, obviously, it's based on data and actuarial analyses, but Progressive has just done it more aggressively than anybody else, with roughly 10 times as many cells used for pricing analyses as any other competitor. So even in an industry like that, where everybody does it to some degree, there are some competitors that really emerge as, you know, being the most aggressively analytical.
You write that analytics used to be kind of a narrow focus in many corporations, but that today's leaders in the field are using it system-wide. What happened?
Well, I don't know if it was just a recognition that analytics are really important, and so they became a little bit more centralized, or the fact that more and more applications demand a kind of a cross-functional approach. But it's very clear that among the aggressive analytical firms, you start to see a centralization of analytical talent forming, you know, central analytical groups. Procter & Gamble has done that. You see a centralization of efforts to manage data, so you can have, you know, enterprise-level data warehouses and analytical technology. You don't just see a bit of software here, a bit of software there, but more enterprise-level analytical technology decisions.
You end your column on a decided upbeat, writing that operations researchers and other numbers crunchers have an important future in corporations. How do you see that future?
Well, I think it is very bright. You know, if we can educate enough people to do this work effectively in the U.S. and other sophisticated economies, you know, the only challenge is that a number of organizations now are acquiring analytical resources from offshore, you know, India and China to a lesser degree, where they churn out lots and lots of statistics and mathematical PhDs, I think countries like the U.S. need to focus a little bit more on rebuilding those analytical capabilities among students, because we certainly don't have enough now.
Turning to some of the key points in your book, what are some important attributes of companies that compete on analytics?
Well, I tried to simplify it a bit and create a little acronym. So D is for data. The acronym is DELTA, by the way, which is, I suppose, somewhat appropriate.
Mathematicians will recognize that.
Exactly. So D is for data and having not only good data but unique data. E is for an enterprise orientation, looking across the entire business and thinking cross-functionally about analytics. L is for leadership, probably the single most important factor if you had to choose one. T is for targets, where you really focus your efforts. And A is for analysts, you know, having the right kinds of analysts in the right roles.
In one of your chapters, you discuss how some companies transform the ability to compete on analytics into a permanent advantage. You mentioned Marriott International, which was a finalist in an Informs competition, Capital One, as we said before, and even the Veterans Administration, the VA. Can you tell us a little about how one or two of these have gained a permanent advantage?
Well, I mean, in a way, the only permanent advantage comes from permanent work. You just have to kind of, particularly since, it's most of these analytical innovations are copyable by competitors. So you take Marriott; they were the first to do revenue optimization or yield management in the lodging industry, but now pretty much everybody does it. So they just keep plugging away. They turned it into a web service to make it relatively easy for individual properties to use. They created a new role called revenue leader, which was familiar with the revenue management system, but also could look for external factors that they might want to use in overriding the system at times. They added not just typical, room stay patterns, but also customer loyalty levels and even customer food and beverage spending to their pricing approaches. So they just keep on adding functionality over time, and that's really the only way, I think, to be successful at this over the long run. You can't really rest on your laurels.
If our listeners are now convinced that they should compete on analytics, they'll want to know what first steps to take. Besides reading your book carefully, can you give us a little advice that appears in the second half of your book?
Well, if you took the typical analyst and said, "What can you do?" It's really, again, not in a quantitative space, because they're probably doing that work pretty well. It's marketing your own efforts and marketing the idea of how you can succeed with analytics. I think highly analytical people are often not that great at marketing themselves. You know, I think that's been recognized at Informs. It's one of the reasons why you have this whole science of better brand now. And so, you know, the number one thing is to start talking with your executives about what can be done with analytics and try to persuade them to endorse more aggressive activities in that regard. You know, don't just kind of sit in your quiet little corner and do good work, because that is useful, but it's probably not going to get noticed unless you engage in some internal marketing activities.
And if an executive turned to you and said, "How do I get started?" What one or two tips would you give him?
Well, I mean, that's a very good sign, because executive interest is one of the two key prerequisites. The other one is probably data, and you find that if in organizations that have good data, they are I think much better positioned to use analytics. So if you're company, for example, has put in an ERP system a few years earlier, but hasn't really taken advantage of it. That's a pretty common situation. You can say, remember, we were supposed to use this data for better decision making, let's start to think about how we can take advantage of it. Or if you've been accumulating web data for several years without really getting into a serious web analytics effort, that would be an opportunity as well. So look for the areas where you're sort of sitting on a gold mine of data that hasn't been mined.
Taking a cue from your book, what would you say is the future of analytical competition?
Well, you know, there are always new technologies, there are always new forms of data that are emerging. I think that we'll see it expand to many areas of business that it wasn't historically used in much. I think we're seeing the application of analytics in areas that historically haven't been that analytical or facts-based. So human resources is a great example where leading companies like Google are focused on identifying the employees who are going to be most likely to be successful and then the employees who are most at risk of leaving. So you can target some interventions there as well. In areas like supply chain management that were kind of the beginning, really, of analytics in business and certainly the use of operations research, I think there's going to be vast amounts more data available and of where inventory and particular items are within your organization and how they move. Every organization will be like a Federal Express or UPS in that regard, knowing where everything is at any given time, including employees. So there's a very bright future, and I think that people who are in the analytics field are very well positioned to move up and succeed.
One final question. Will you be writing more in the future about analytics?
Well, I will. Very soon, in fact, I was just finishing up the copy editing on a new book called Analytics at Work. Smarter Decisions, Better Results is the subtitle, and that's coming out in January from Harvard Business Press.
We look forward to reading it.
Thank you.
That's all the time we have today. We've been talking with Tom Davenport, author of the book Competing on Analytics. Professor, thank you for talking with us.
My pleasure, Mary.
And thank you for listening to this Science at Better podcast by INFORMS, the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. For more information about operations research and the series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org. Good day, and remember, keep on crunching those numbers.